Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, again, for those of you who are tuning in time after time to the lowly episodes of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, getting your daily dose of humour amidst an incredibly horrible black hole of a reality that seems to take all the fun and just suck right out of it. You know, just like, oh my God, if reality was a $2 hooker, it'd be that good at sucking. Now, I wanted to also remind people today that I'm in a little bit of a financial emergency. Just got a call from the hospital last night, and my wife's going to be going into surgery like in the next couple of days. And that means for the next month or so, she won't be able to earn an income of any kind. So we need to take up about maybe a 50% of our income shortfall within the next month. That means we need to raise about $2,000. New Zealand dollars, by the way, is maybe that's, I don't know, like 1,400 US dollars or something like that. So if you can help us, now would be a very, very good time. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate either through that Patreon account, so you can give us a monthly, or through the PayPal or the KiwiBank for the New Zealand listeners. Really do need your help, ladies and gentlemen. Cannot continue to do what I'm doing without you. My very special guest joining me today, on the other hand, holds the moniker James Bond is Real. Now, a lot of people have seen James Bond films and you think, oh, it's such a great franchise. It's so much fantastical bullshit. No, no, no. There's a whole bunch of real, evil, scary people in the intelligence agencies of this world, and they do come up with weird, freaky, evil schemes in order to try and control it. But for some reason, they haven't gotten total control of it just yet, hence the existence of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Now, James Bond is Real. Do you have a real name?
Right. My name is Mike Sparks. I'm the author of the book. I've got my little visual aid here.
James Bond.
I wrote the book in 2011.
Yeah.
And so that book warned people about the deep state before it now became vogue. And that's good. I'm glad the people of the world realize there is a deep state. That's actually three levels above the nation state figurehead. So if you've got President Trump, you've got the intelligence agencies above him, you have the banksters, and then the secret societies themselves. For a visual of the secret societies, you just watch the movie Eyes Wide Shut with Stanley Kubrick, and that'll give you a visual of the Rothschild Illuminati. In the United States here, we are run by the Rockefeller Illuminati. And there is a rivalry between the two. One wants more war and death, the Rockefellers, and the Rothschilds are tree huggers. Let's go save the environment, cut down carbon emissions and all that. So they're obsessed with sex. So one's obsessed with violence, the other's obsessed with sex. And the leader of the Rockefeller Illuminati died a few days ago, David Rockefeller, at the age of 101. Very evil man. Evilest man on the planet until now. He obviously died, not willingly, because he had like 7 heart transplants. He didn't have to wait for a donor. But at 101, he was getting supernatural evil help, no doubt. The question that we have to ask to get ahead of the threat is, did he have death contingency plans? Which I think he would. You know, if you're 100 years old, you know you die at any moment, you would think that he had contingency plans. Like, as soon as I die, I want this to happen, this to happen, this to happen. Now, the good news is, believe it or not, in all this, is he does have a son, David Jr., who's only 75, and he's taken over. So hopefully he wants to live for a few more years, and he doesn't want to do a Samson, you know, where he pulls down the world down, you know, because hey, I'm leaving the world, you know, like David is. So, David the senior. So, you know, have you had any feedback at all, Vinny, from your listeners about David Rockefeller dying? Or they're completely obsessed with other things?
Well, it was just like a blip on the radar, like, blip, David Rockefeller's dead, and then no more mentions. Just keeps, and the New World Order agenda just keeps on trucking, you know?
Right. Well, that's what they want. They want you to not pay attention to them. You know, infighting is what they want. Now, I believe that every 10 years, the zeitgeist changes. That is the way that the people of the world think. in a general kind of way. And I believe in 2010 or 11, we switched from the skeptical, you know, zeitgeist of, you know, 2001, you know, the 9/11 attacks, which is a lack of decency to get to the bottom of that from a reality perspective. Let's find out what had happened in objective reality, so not have reality fraud pulled over our eyes. In 2010 or 11, I believe we've entered a new zeitgeist of hyper-opinionism. That means with people all obsessed with their little cell phone, they are seeing the world completely on this little bitty screen, and their narrow-mindedness is now empowered to harden their hearts by a lot of factoids. Now, President Trump took advantage of this to become president.
That's why they call it a cell phone.
Cell phone. Oh, that's very good. Well, the thing is that now people are not using the internet correctly, which is to have a full screen, look at all the facts, and be empowered. Instead, they're becoming more narrow-minded, and they're using these things that look official, what we used to say store-bought in the old days. You know, if something went to the printer and he printed a calendar and had Raquel Welch, but, you know, we'd take it seriously. There's the date, you know, 1971. You know, you take it seriously because someone has to put serious money to print the calendar. You know, there was a stovepipe to truth. In other words, if a magazine article comes out or a newspaper comes out, there was some vetting, and there are people putting money on the line. They're not going to just put BS up, right? So people had no access to make these things. So if you were just like a person who's not happy with the world, you'd make some flyers and you hand them out and sit on a street corner on a soapbox saying the world's going to end tomorrow. You didn't have that credibility. But now everybody has, with their desktop computers and their cell phones, an ability to take their nonsense and make it look store-bought. So you got Shaquille O'Neal saying the world's flat. It's like, get his big, I don't know what I can say on the radio here.
Shoes?
Yes. Put him on an airplane, have him see the curvature of the earth, and then he should say, wrong, I'm wrong. But he's getting away with putting out nonsense like this because it looks official. It looks store-bought. You know what I mean? It's official looking. And so that's what I think we are. We're in an age where you can easily cross anybody on any issue. I'm telling you, I just made a suggestion to somebody yesterday, and they were already in a pissing contest with me, like, my penis is bigger than your penis. And I said, you know, if you do that with me, you're going to lose. I've actually briefed Illuminati members, and I'll tell you who they were. You know, Secretary of the Army, Thomas White, Assistant Secretary of State, Richard Armitage, and Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, General John Keane. So I've actually briefed these people with good ideas, expecting decency out of them. Don't know what I was thinking at the time. And they didn't do a damn thing. I find out later they're members of Bilderberg clubs. They go to the Bohemian Grove. They're Illuminati. So anyway, I'm telling this guy, you're not going to win in a pissing contest with me. But he, you know, does the block you on Facebook thing. And all I suggested to him was, you know, instead of just criticizing, you know, go ahead and do something, a work of art of your own, and tell a positive, proactive story instead of just criticizing others or analyzing others' works. So that's what I mean by the hyper-opinionated age we live in. The Rockefellers have got everybody out there, each other's throats, over the most simplest things. You don't know who you're going to cross in this hyper-opinionated age that we're in, the zeitgeist that we're in.
Now, I wanted to add on to that because the documentary Vaxxed is coming out in New Zealand on like April the 2nd, right? So I've been contacted and they want me to help them out and, you know, do some Vox Populi and everything like that. And you wouldn't believe the potential shitstorm of this puppy, right? Like people who want to ring up the owner of the theater or whatever and just go, no, you can't show this, it's anti-vaccine, it's everything. Or people wanting to show up and protest, or in many cases the documentary being pulled out of film festivals and things like that, based on zero evidence of any kind being brought up by these vaxxers to dispute anything that's in the film, and none of them have even bothered to watch it. Right? And so you're right. We're in the, and as soon as you said that hyper opinionated, I was just like, whoa, he's onto something really big here.
Oh, it's the age we live in, and the Rockefellers put us in that age. They want us in fighting, because if we're fighting amongst ourselves, we're not questioning and fighting them and their rule. And they put us in this mode by, as you saw, technology, you know, march of technology that started with broadcast radio, broadcast television, which there's no doubt in my mind that something is being piped into broadcast television, like mind control, hypnosis, actual thoughts, like don't question the status quo, don't question the social order, just like out of the John Carpenter movie, They Live. There's no doubt if some scientists with oscilloscopes took broadcast television, they could probably dissect and see that something evil is being piped in, not just low-grade, you know, hypnosis state, which is everyone agrees to that. I'm not talking about the low-level hum. I'm talking about actual subliminal messages. And you have to expect that if you want to get ahead of the threat. You've got to say they've been working at this for many years. They'd work. This is in their interest to do this. So that's why when you tell people certain things, they have these mental blocks. So you say 9/11 inside job, all of a sudden danger, warning, Professor Will Robinson. They just can't handle it. You're going to wonder, that sounds like something that's put in there. And the document you could read on this is the 1954 Bilderberg document, which is called Secret Weapons for Quiet Wars. If I got that right, Quiet Wars for Secret Weapons. But anyway, in it they said, you know, World War II is over. We could build a public utopia or we could build a private one. We will build a private one. Hell with the sheeple. They obviously knew they could build a utopia for everybody, and they said, no, we're just going to build it for ourselves. And in that manual, it shows you they manipulate people by actual mathematical formulas. They can actually take out, you know, let's say toilet paper from the equation, and then they'll see how many people are going to have a desire to drink beer. I mean, they've basically taken the way sheeple behave and broken it down into a formula, and they believe that they can change the inputs and control people. And one of the things that they want to do is, you know, take away the man who stands up for truth, the man who's got the facts, and he's not going to budge no matter what. You know, you're George Bailey and It's a Wonderful Life. They don't want that hero. So I write about that in James Bond Is Real, that Ian Fleming is showing you with James Bond what our role model should be. We should be like James Bond, get to the bottom of these scams, and then once we get to the bottom of the scams, defeat them. And one of the goals of the Illuminati,
I would say,
the deep state, would be to destroy the James Bond citizen who can do that.
I would say that we're halfway there to being James Bond, because a good portion of the males in our society are already alcoholic womanizers.
Right. Well, but that was camouflaged. You know, there are several layers in James Bond's novels that Ian Fleming wrote, and he did that as camouflage so he could get his message out. He was given the job of writing James Bond to help the image, public image of MI6 in light of the scandals where the defectors, the Cambridge Five, defected to the Soviet Union, right? McLean and all those guys. So what he was doing was working directly for MI6. But what happened is he said, okay, now I'm going to get some social commentary in there, and I'm going to get some warnings about the Illuminati, the specter of the Illuminati. And if you saw the last James Bond movie, you can see that clear, that they're making false flag events in order to fear-mong the sheeple into a surveillance state. These are all things that Ian Fleming gave Albert Cubby Broccoli and Harry Saltzman the job of making his books into James Bond movies, only on condition that they'd always have a secret message to help the people of the world. So when I say James Bond is real, you've got to look past the sex and the adventure camouflage and look at the social commentary and the warnings that are there in the books and in the movies that they are dedicated to doing. You know, so the movies were designed so that they get the warning out to a mass number of people and not get Ian Fleming killed. Now, Jim Mars, the famous writer of Crossfire about the JFK assassination, told me he suspects that Fleming was killed, because when the Warren Commission was coming out, he knew John F. Kennedy personally, Ian Fleming, and he had over, you know, several billion readers of James Bond novels. And if he had said, look, this is bogus, this Warren Commission report, trying to pin it all on Oswald, who's all over the, you know, intelligence community. He was a red herring patsy, not a lone nut patsy. Alan Dulles is the guy who killed, you know, JFK. But he wanted to showboat. Alan Dulles wanted the whole world to know that he did it without him doing it by having this red herring patsy, Oswald. And there's more than one Oswald. Lee Oswald, there's Harvey Oswald, there's an Oswald that's like 6'3" and 225 pounds. But all these Oswalds are doing things in Mexico City and driving cars, and he's not even supposed to be able to drive a car. He's all over the place as a red herring. So you'd be continually guessing the mob did it, LBJ did it. And, you know, if you keep guessing to everybody, nobody gets to blame. Well, that was already put in place. Then LBJ goes, no, I don't think we ought to do that. I think we ought to make just a lone nut. Well, it's too late. Oswald's a red herring patsy. But anyway, Fleming could have condemned that. And it's so easy to give somebody a heart attack to kill them. And he died on the golf course, you know, Ian Fleming. So I tend to believe it's probably true. They killed him to keep him quiet and not condemn the Warren Commission.
I wanted to get down this pike here because you're talking about the head of state being three levels below the Illuminati and the intel community right on top of there. And I can actually confirm that this is very similar in New Zealand because it came out in mainstream news here that SIS, State Intelligence Services, was surveilling every single member of parliament. And it came out in a bit of a leak that one of our Green MPs, I believe Keith Locke, had been under surveillance since he was 8 years old and his mother took him to a communist film festival, right? And I'm just thinking, okay, all right, how did that work? There's the intelligence agencies on top of the parliament, keeping a control over them, and then the secret societies and bankers on top of them. How was it again?
Right. That's right, the bankers and then the secret societies, the guys that have this child sacrifice, kiddie porn, you know, the hoods, the naked chicks with the great tits, you know, like an Eyes Wide Shut. That's them at the very top.
They reserve all the best for themselves.
Rose are best for themselves. Now, you got to remember that the way that this unfolded is because we underestimate the amount of evil people in the world. The actual psychological breakdown of evil people in the world is 25, 40, 35. What that means is 25% of all people on planet Earth are born with no conscience or weak consciences. Those are called psychopaths and sociopaths. 25%. That means you get four people in your room, or let's say you're in public and you're at a gas station. One out of four is a psych sociopath. One out of four. Okay, the U.S. government, based on the U.S. Constitution, can't give you a direct quote, but in my gut reaction and, you know, and analysis and thought, I'd have to say the U.S. Constitution expects 1 in 10 being a psych sociopath. That's too low. That means they're lowballing evil, and there's no safeguards in the U.S. Constitution against reality fraud. They're sweet on reality fraud. Remember the Boston Tea Party in 1773? Dressed up as Indians, throwing tea overboard. No wonder there's no safeguard against 9/11s and JFKs and big, you know, fraudulent events. The Founding Fathers are a little sweet on them. There's no inquest in the United States, public inquest on things like 9/11 or JFK Jr. being killed or anything, because, you know, that's a systemic flaw in the U.S. Constitution, which I think is lowballing the amount of people that are actually evil in the world without consciences or weak consciences, which is one in every four. Now, the next number is 40%, and those are the sheeple. Those are the people who do whatever the authority figures say. And that is proven by the Milgen experiment in 1965, where they took college kids and said, okay, some of you are going to be guards, and some of you are going to be inmates. After a few days, they had to shut the experiment down because they were putting people in a room and, you know, being given a button or, you know, a dial and told, you know, keep shocking this guy until he talks. And they found that 65% would keep shocking the guy until he's dead, Now, the guy was an actor, but it proved, you know, 25% psych sociopaths, 40% sheeple. They will just do what some authority figure in a lab coat, business suit, tie, you know, tells them to, what to do. So that is their power base of the Illuminati, is that they 65% of all people will do all kinds of evil, you know, throw people in ovens, you know. That leaves only 35% are the real heroes. Those are the conscience doers. Those are the people who say, gosh, daughter, I don't care what you tell me to do. I am not shocking that guy. I am not throwing that guy in the oven. I am not going to this bogus war. I'm not going to do evil. You know, and there isn't enough of us.
Does there need to be? Because what was you talking about? Is there enough of us? Like via a percentage, via resistance. Because I don't know about you, man, but I've had a look at a hell of a lot of different military tactics in history, and ultimately, if your tactics are better, you can beat a force that's much, much, much larger than your own.
Right, well, that's my forte, is military operational art, equipment, and tactics. But the thing is that if you study, I think the best guy on this subject is Sun Tzu and not Clausewitz. He says, your cause has to be legitimate for you to get the people behind you. And if your cause is not just, you're going to be hard-pressed to be as sly and clever, you know, from physical force, which is psychological operations, combat engineering, firepower, and maneuver. You'll be hard-pressed to keep winning if your cause is not just. And the example of that would be the Maurice Line in the 1960s, France was trying to hold on to Algeria, and they were having problem with the FMLN infiltrating across the border. They built an electronic wall, you know, fence, and had it dialed into artillery and quick reaction forces, and they sealed the border. But all it did was give them like 2 years to get a political settlement. In other words, military force can't give you victory in perpetuity forever if your cause is unjust. And so that, you know, with the Roman legion, the Roman legions could only keep Rome together so long with the moral corruption. So I'm not a just cause, just world person, because that's a delusion that, you know, we don't have to do anything. Evil's going to get us just desserts. Well, David Rockefeller didn't get his just desserts in this life, did he?
Nope.
He probably still has Scarlett Johansson's breast in his face, you know, till he died. You know what I'm saying? So these people say, oh, we don't have to do anything. We're just going to let, you know, karma get them. That's bogus. We have to fight for justice now. That's our damn duty.
I love that. Okay. I love that that myth. Oh, karma will do it, mate. Karma will do it. Really, really. Are you a good person? Yeah. Have you always been a good person? Yeah. Have you been shafted many, many times in your life despite that fact? Yes. Do you know heaps of scumbags who are incredibly rich and have never actually had a single consequence for any of their scumbaggery and are still ruling the fucking world today? Yes. Then karma's not what you think it is.
It's not working. A karma, the just world fallacy, is probably one of the things the CIA got together in their dry erase board and said, what can we feed the sheeple? Oh, just tell them that they don't have to fight any of this complicated political, military evil. They'll just tell them the karma will get them.
Brilliant! We come to the conclusion many, many times on this show. Brilliant, but it's evil, but it's still brilliant.
Well, there's the thing. You see, the problem is that I go right back to David Rockefeller. A few days ago, he died. He is not a happy camper right now, okay? If you don't believe in God, the lights came out, that's it. Satan didn't come through for him, okay? Now, if you're a Christian like I am, he's very hot right now, you know? He's not doing so good. So no matter what happened, you know, which way you think's happened, he is not winning. So these people who think that they're in this life going to get over on the good, decent people and, you know, the naive sheeple people, are deluding themselves. They're not going to have anyone in their corner when they die. And they need to think about what's going to happen in the next life. And of course they're not. And that doesn't make any logical sense. So, no, I don't want to get all metaphysical on you, but I have a perfect memory. I can actually remember all the way back to when I was a baby, coming right out of my mom's womb. I remember being in the hospital bed, and my father going down and going Gucci Gucci Goo to me, and I can actually remember being in my mom's womb at that moment. In other words, I don't have a direct memory of being in my mom's womb, but I remember at that moment in the hospital crib, bed, whatever, remembering what the hell was going on here. It's just darkness. So I have a perfect memory, okay, of everything. So I know that something magical happened to create me, and I know that when I die and other people die, something magical metaphysically is going to happen. And we should be concerned about it. But I mean, not concerned about it, but yeah, don't misbehave and be a jerk. But I want to get ahead of the threat, and I believe what David Rockefeller has done, besides steal all the Fort Knox gold, like in Goldfinger, he didn't do it by a heist. He did it by taking the bars and switching them with bars that were just gold-plated. He also stole Germany's gold. You remember reading about that?
No.
No, yeah. Germany's gold was stored in New York City banks, and then they switched out all the gold bars. And Andrea Merkel, who's an Illuminati puppet, that witch with a B didn't do anything. She should have said, you know, we're breaking diplomatic relations. You better damn well get all this gold. We're kicking your embassy out. No, they push Germany around. They actually fly an airplane into a mountain full of passengers when Germany tried to do something against the New World Order. You didn't hear one thing from Andrea Merkel about that. Anyway, David Rockefeller is always gaming the other side. He helped the Russians get into space by giving the job of putting the first satellite in the incompetent Navy's hands. At the end of World War II, we had the National Security Act of 1947 creating the Central Intelligence Agency, the abysmal U.S. Marine Corps and U.S. Air Force, and they're all fighting for their little, cheerleading missions. And so to help the Russians get into space first, they gave the job of going into space not to von Braun and the Army. They gave it to the Navy. And the Navy botched it, and the Russians get into space. Now, he did this all throughout his life. He went to Red China and gave them technology in the 80s and told them, stop doing this communist stuff. You can just use that to control the people, but get into a hybrid economy and start making better widgets. And look what happened. Now they're full of money because they're making better widgets than we are, and they're telling people what to do by bribery. Not just military threats. They're taking over the world by, buying them out. So this is something David Rockefeller did all throughout his life.
In the case of New Zealand, our Auckland City mayor, a great big front page of the paper, him wearing a Chinese cloak with a little hands clasp like this after he just got $250,000 from various anonymous donors during a Chinese fundraiser, and one of which was a signed copy of Hu Jintao's signature, the premier of China, and that sold for the big money. And it's like, dude, look, the triads run this country now, and the triads are run by the People's Liberation Army intelligence.
No, right. I wanted to talk about that. No one else is talking about it. You know, we need to talk about what's happening. For right now, during this false peace, there's economic conquest taking place. They are buying out chunks of Australia, New Zealand, and anywhere else where they can say we have an economic operation there, economic colony. And the idea is that then you just have so many chunks of terrain owned by the Chinese, you get to the point where it's like, in the 7th century, the Chinese monk Wen Fao Hu got into a junk and sailed the seven seas, and he landed there first. They can create this fictional narrative. Before long, they're saying Australia and New Zealand belongs to them. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is the Rockefellers owe a lot of money to the Chinese. What they want with the Pacific Pivot is not to contain China. They want China to sink one of our tin can ships, which are under 10,000 tons, which didn't even survive in World War II. They want one of our ships to get blown up by the Chinese, and then all the debts that the Illuminati owe China will be erased. They say, oop, we're at war, debts canceled. That's what the Pacific Pivot is all about. It has nothing to do with defending you nice people. I love you people in New Zealand and Australia. Beautiful, nice people, and the other Asian people in the world in the South China Sea. We're not trying to do that.
Well,
they're trying to find an excuse to cancel the debt.
Yeah, 35% of us are real nice people anyway, but go ahead.
Right, so the idea is to put these deliberately weak military forces patrolling the South China Sea, you know, put 2,000 gyrenes that are tankless, they're pedestrian, they go around, you know, doing hand-to-hand combat with each other. I mean, that really is going to intimidate a nation or a whole region that specializes in martial arts, not... They want somebody to kill some Americans, and then they'll cancel the debt and have a war. Now, the war that they want is obviously, like I said, I got away from my main goals. The main goals of the Illuminati, and you can bank on them, destroy the individual who can make a difference, you know, your James Bond citizens, your George Baileys. Two, make money, max profits. Most people can understand that, got it. Three is to depopulate the world. There are 7 billion people in the world. They like 6 billion of us to go away. And the only way it's going to happen, unfortunately, because these things that they've created, cancer, unsafe automobiles, all of these things are not doing it well enough. America is now the number 3 country in the world, no, populated country in the world behind China and India. Now, that should tell you what they're going to do. They're going to let India keep making better widgets. And if that widget production starts threatening the income of China, China's going to say, you know, we're going to stage a false flag here, and then we're going to turn you into a nuclear parking lot. So India needs to get its act together, because if there's a nuclear war between India and China, 2 billion people just like that are going to go away. That's what the Illuminati want. So that's why I'm worried that David Rockefeller has these contingency plans, that on his death, we're going to want to move up Operation you know, toilet paper, whatever he wants to call India. You know, India doesn't use toilet paper. You know, whatever he's going to call the project, you know, between India and China to get a nuclear war between them, or India and Pakistan, because they've got to kill billions of people, and, you know, it ain't working. You know, their scams are not killing enough people fast enough.
Now, John Pilger's made a documentary called The Coming War on China, and the map he shows us of China's geopolitical position, like just right there on the globe, and the map of the US bases that completely encircle it like a hangman's noose. And it says that what's going to happen, or at least the nuclear experts have said, that if a war between China and the US kicks off, if they use nukes, the amount of dust that gets put into the atmosphere from the first couple of impacts and so on and so forth will actually block out the sunlight, and we wouldn't be able to grow crops for approximately 3 years. And it would be freezing temperatures every night, right? That's what they call nuclear winter.
It's an ecological disaster that they don't know the enormity, the scale, the order of magnitude that could happen to the Earth, you know, the fragile way the Earth is, you know, keeping its balance at all times, you know, turning all the time so it's not unevenly heated, the weather patterns to you know, all of that, you know, equilibrium stuff will be disrupted, right? Mm. So, but the idea is that they, the elites, will ride it out. Now, this is the part where it gets exotic, and people don't want to go there, but, I mean, we have to go there. We can't just say that we're going to have a nuclear 9/11 and that's the next thing that they're going to fearmong. We've got to think ahead. And, you know, one of David Rockefeller's brothers, Lawrence Rockefeller, was big into the UFO ET disclosure thing. So there's a soft disclosure where some guy says, guess what, God is dead. We've been talking to ETs all this time, which President Trump can say, bull, you know what, I didn't authorize that. Or there's the hard disclosure where a UFO lands on the White House lawn, or they actually do the Independence Day where they're hovering over a city, and you've got to say, well, we can't ignore this. We have human power, human-created anti-gravity craft that can mimic supposedly extraterrestrials coming to visit us rudely. So if that's the game plan, then that could be underway right now as we speak, you know, upon David's death. Now, the idea then would be, you know, we're scared. Everyone's got to hold hands like Independence Day and fight these guys, and then, you know, drop national sovereignty and have a one-world government. So that's the last goal of the Illuminati. I remember I shared the 4 goals. The last goal is everybody on the same sheet of music, and I call that the metaphysical verdict. What it is when David Rockefeller dies, let's say he meets the Lord, and the Lord says, what the hell were you doing? And he goes, I was just doing what everyone else is doing. The whole world's behind me. we're all in this one world government thing, and we're thumbing our nose at you, you know, like the Tower of Babel, and, you know, you can't kill us all. I know you love some of us, those Bible bangers you probably like. So that's what they're hoping for, is their final fire insurance, is the whole world is in a one world government in opposition, you know, to God or, you know, decency. And so you got the metaphysical verdict. So you can count on these major goals. And I've been telling people this, obviously, since 2011. And it came true. I mean, everything that Obama did, he's Rothschild, Illuminati, tree hugger, with a little taint of a little warmonging to keep the Rockefeller Illuminati in play. It's all come through. And I can anticipate what these guys are going to do because I know their agenda, so which I've just shared with you and your listeners right now. They're, you know, destroy the individual, max profits, thin the herd, get everybody on the same sheet of music, okay? You've got these goals. You can count on it. And then, but I don't understand. I voted for Paul Ryan. He's turning into be a total dirtbag. He's a rhino. He's a Republican name only. No, he's an Illuminati, secret society, deep state creep who has a right-wing form of the New World Order that he pushes. Versus, you know, Hillary Clinton is a left-wing creep who pushes a left-wing form, you know, that the left-wing sheeple, you know, type B personality people adore. But, you know, a type A personality stoic is going to want some guy who's going to say, earn your own keep, daggone it. You know, earn your own job, make your own job. But right now in the United States, walk-in businesses are dying. So whereas Red China has capitalism and communism hybrid, here in the United States, we have anti-capitalism. There's no capital. You can't get money to start a business. And the rent, the bankers are charging too much rent. I know I used to run a gun range. And it was impossible to get enough people to shoot in a day to pay the rent.
Mm.
And so, you know, walk-in businesses are dying in the United States. And that's what the Illuminati want. They want to squeeze us out of the middle class that has any time to fight their rule, turn us all into low-class slaves.
Well, if that was the goal, I reckon it's a really brilliant idea that they hired the man to save the economy who managed to bankrupt a casino. Like, how do you even do that?
we just got to hope that his instincts will override what they're feeding him. But right now, as you know, he's got right-wing Rockefeller Illuminati people on his staff, you know, in his cabinet. And that was a fatal mistake JFK made. He thought that I could have some of these guys like McGeorge Bundy in my cabinet, who's an Illuminati skull and bones guy, and it's going to be okay. I'm going to leave Alan Dulles in charge of the CIA, even though I told him I'm going to fire him for the Bay of Pigs fiasco, which was a setup. You know, it was deliberately designed to fail. If you wanted to do the Bay of Pigs right, you take the Isle of Palms. It's an island south of Cuba. That could have been defended by a brigade. You know, you talk about military tactics and not having, and I talked about not having the legitimacy. Well, if you have an island and you have a 3-to-1 advantage in defense and you're really good, you could hold that island indefinitely. You know, we've got, you know, Guantanamo Bay, right? A chunk of Cuba. But that would have been a defendable plan. In other words, no popular uprising if the Brigade 2506 had taken the Isle of Palms. They still have the Isle of Palms today. But no, they wanted to try to land and have this revolt against Castro when not enough people realized he was a bad guy. You know what I mean? It was premature. It was designed to ruin Kennedy. Anyway, he didn't fire Dulles for that. He says, oh, just stay there, you know, run the CIA, and we'll retire you at the end of the year. Dulles had a whole year to start the conspiracy to kill JFK. And he's the guy who started it and directed it. Talbot, in his book, The Devil's Chessboard, proves it. I mean, what was CIA ex-CIA Director Dulles doing in the CIA Operations Center on November 22nd, 1963? Hey, guys, I'm done playing golf. Let me just stroll in here because Kennedy's, you know, making a motorcade through Dallas, Texas. I mean, it's illogical. You don't just come in there just routinely and just say, hey, I'm just here waiting for something possibly to happen. No, he set it all up. When you fire people, it's mean, but you get them out of the building. John F. Kennedy didn't do that. He did not dispose of Dulles immediately, did not disband the CIA. And that's why we're in the mess we're in today. And Trump had better watch his 6 o'clock.
Now, this idea behind destroying the world and then retreating to massive underground bases and cities that are connected by these super high speed rails and things like that. I just thought to myself, you know, that seems like one of the most retarded ideas ever. And they're like, well, why do you say that, Vinny? Well, dig this. You've just helped to destroy the world. First of all, not a very great idea. But your plan to escape its destruction is to go underground in the dark with the worst pedophiles, murderers, and psychopaths that the world has ever known and stay there for a long period of time with them. Does this sound like a good idea? No.
No, but that's only one part of the plan. Again, we have to go there. Why have UFOs gotten bigger over time? You know, 1945, the end of World War II, they're very crude. You know, Maury Island incident, they got slag coming out of the UFOs, you know, radiation, like a nuclear reactor is powering them. It's clunky. But you look at the Phoenix Lights, the UFOs are now massive. Now, from a military perspective, size has no benefit. If you're trying to maneuver, you know, fight somebody, you know, go into space, you know, the X-15 here, okay, size doesn't help you. The only time size helps you is if you're in a transport function. So basically, the UFOs, anti-gravity craft, also will take the elites off planet during the crisis, whether, you know, extinction level event. You know, the fake UFO invasion, the fake, you know, meteor coming. You see what I'm saying? So I'm just saying that you're right. There is the deep underground military base phenomena in the continuity of government. There's no doubt about that. I've talked to one of the continuity of government soldiers. You know, when I was at Fort Bragg, I got on the phone from another guy, you know, and this is all internal. You know, before I was even into any of this, you know, I'm a military reformer. I just want to make the military more effective. And one of my soldiers said, hey, you know, you better talk to this guy. You know, so he got him on the phone, got me on the phone, and he's part of it. He's one of the guards that are going to keep the sheeple out of the entrance of the continuity of government, you know, deep underground military bases. So that's been verified that it's true. And these guys are going to have, you know, I don't know. I guess I got to make a guess. I'd say 90-10. 90% of the elite are going to be in deep underground military bases, and then 10% are going to fly in the anti-gravity craft to, you know, moon bases. You have to assume that if we have anti-gravity craft, we have bases on the moon, because it's not that hard. Once you get out of the Earth's, you know, first 100,000 feet, which is the hardest part of space travel, is the first 100,000 feet in the atmosphere and the gravity. Once you're past that, it's a cakewalk. You just got to, you know, have some propulsion behind you, which a lot of people don't know. Even I didn't know. I've been doing research on it because, you know, the space program scam that, you know, we could have a nuclear reactor heating up hydrogen in space and our rockets will go twice as fast, you know, 50,000 miles an hour instead of 25,000. That means we get to the moon in half the time and Mars not this 9 months, you know, in suspended animation. And you remember in the suspended animation movies, one of the guys or gals, the machine doesn't work and she's like a corpse. You know, it's like a submarine movie. There's always got to have a close the hatch scene. But in science fiction, deep space travel, there's always the suspended animation scene where it doesn't work. But, you know, no, we're talking about a few weeks, you're in Mars, okay, just by using nuclear propulsion. And like I said, you know, if we had an honest space program, the Army would have been in charge of the space program like the Chinese Air Force is in charge of the space program. Here's Von Braun's, you know, three-stage ferry rocket. Notice he has an aerospace plane in 1955 that re-enters at a shallow altitude, which is much safer than a capsule. So if you saw the Apollo 13 mission, you know, on the Ron Howard movie, they almost skipped off into space. You know, with the capsules. You know, that's what NASA says they want to do now with the Orion. Go back to a capsule. Which is nonsense. You know, the aerospace plane. In fact, we could have put a man into space before the Russians if we had taken the X-15 here and put it on a booster. That's not the scale here, but, you know. We could have been in space first. But the Illuminati don't want us. Didn't want us in space first. They wanted the Russians built up as a big boogeyman. And they're playing these games all the time. So probably most of your audience knows that the CIA created ISIS as they created Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda. And the idea is to be a magnet for all these nihilist, you know, moon god worshippers. You got nothing to live for, but hey, if you come down here, you'll be a rock star, and you'll get 13 virgins in the next life. Just come and be our whack-a-mole. You know, we're going to play whack-a-mole with our fighter bombers.
Yeah, be a completely uneducated, easily manipulated idiot that we can use as cannon fodder, which will scare the hell out of the white Christian people so that we can justify any amount of wars and any amount of invasions and any amount of drug trafficking.
Right. Now, this is all part of military malpractice. You see, I'm coming down from the military practice, military art, and the U.S. military doesn't value the battle against the Earth. There's always two battles to win in war. The battle against the Earth, because if you can't defeat the Earth, you have no military power left to fight anyone else. And then there's the battle against man. Well, the U.S. military doesn't give a damn about the battle against the Earth. So you don't see anybody saying, look, we're in Afghanistan. The Pashtuns are causing the trouble. We need to keep these guys out of Afghanistan. You circle the whole country with a sense of security fence like the Maurice Line, the Mannerheim Line. You have quick reaction forces. You have dialed in artillery. You have observation attack planes circling overhead. You seal the border. And then you go to the Pashtuns and say, you're going to behave and you'll be part of Afghanistan, or we're going to wall you out. And you can have your own little Pashtunistan, and everybody's going to be taking pot shots at you, you know, with your drug crops that you're growing, you know. You see what I'm trying to say? That's the way the Roman legion, the Roman general, would handle these problems. If you get like a space time travel machine, you'd bring back Julius Caesar and say, seal the border. Seal the Syrian Iraqi border, and they would. They'd get all their little Roman soldiers, and they'd build the wall. Done. They got no place to run. They're surrounded by the wall. And then you kill everybody in the inside who doesn't want to behave. That's when you smother conflicts and end them. You don't hear any of this talk in the U.S. military because they're all egomaniacs. They want to go around and shoot people because it's very ego gratifying. You know, or if they're a fighter bomber pilot, whack-a-mole. That's not mature adult military sound practice. If adults, like Sun Tzu says, what matters in war is victory, not prolonged operations, however brilliantly executed. So Sun Tzu is saying, watch out for this, you know, racket. War is a racket, Smedley Butter. Well, all of life is a racket. I wrote a book on that, too. You can see it online, Racket Theory. And you'll see that it's not just war if it's a racket. Rackets are in all walks of life. They don't want to solve cancer. They don't want to solve disease. Because there's more money in keeping the problem in play. That's where your 35%ers have to say, no, 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 no. We're tired of being wallowing in these problems. Let's nick these problems in the bud, and let's get our ass over into space and do something really exciting. Okay? I mean, in other words, we've played this chapter before, this whole World War II thing. I mean, that's what I'd say. You know, if I was at an Illuminati meeting, I'd say, haven't we done this before?
Well, can I make a point there?
World War thing?
Because that was the thing. I just thought about that just before the show today. I was like, why do we always keep bringing up World War II as an example of evil versus good or something like that? It's because in World War I, nobody even knew why anybody was fighting, and there was no clear good guy and there was no clear bad guy. And every war subsequent after the after World War II was started off by a false flag operation and had no reason for happening anyway. So the only war in all of history that anybody can even remember being taught about that had any legitimacy whatsoever was World War II. Now, that was like, what, 60 years ago? And there's been a war going on every single day since then? And so that's why it's the only example. It's the go-to example.
We were the good guys. They were real bad guys.
Just war.
Huh?
Yeah, Stutz Terkel wrote a book on that, The Just War, I think it was. But the thing is about World War II was they wanted, you know, the communists, which were created by the Rothschild Illuminati, to fight the Germans and to destruction. And we in the West were to stay out of it and just build armaments. Something happened And I believe that supernatural evil got involved and taught, you know, Neville Chamberlain. It got through Neville Chamberlain's head that you're, I hope I can say this word on the radio here, pussy. MI5 told him he was a pussy. And he said, no, with this, we're going to defend Poland. The British had no way of defending Poland. And that's what caused Germany to go in the other direction, which I don't know if I'm doing it right with the camera here. They were going east to meet the Russians, as the plan A was, and I write about this in James Bond is Real. But instead, you got Neville Chamberlain saying, we're going to stop you in Poland. And, of course, that turned Hitler around, and he went west and started the rest of World War II. And then what happened was there's unintended consequences. People like Ian Fleming, James Gavin, Matthew Ridgway, these decent men, 35%ers, got in charge. And we got very good at war. You know, James Gavin, Ian Fleming came up all these great ways to win the war, and the war was brought to a close faster than the Nazis could get out. You know, a lot of them didn't get out, but a lot of them did. But they want, obviously, all of them to get out. They didn't want to lose at all. But you see, the point is, at the end of the war, 1945, they said, we must never let decent people run the war effort. So the West has been in a perpetual war state since 1945. And here in the United States, with National Security Act of 1947, we created the CIA, treasonous, dirty tricks outfit, instigating wars, divided the services with the Marine Corps and the Army trying to win wars by maneuver, and you got the Air Force and the Navy trying to win wars by firepower, and it delusional, instead of having a harmonious, war-smothering adult philosophy. We've been going overseas and bleeding and causing wars to happen and to continue and prolong as per the deep state's wishes. Now, Mike, and so I'm not giving you this as a hypothetical. I have briefed top-level Illuminati people, you know, Secretary of the Army, the Assistant Secretary of State Armitage, and the Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, General Keane, about things that will win wars, and they will not do them. In other words, you back them into a logical corner and say, this costs not much money. We can do it very cheaply. We can do it quickly. We'll save lives. Your soldiers. You used to be an 11th ACR guy, Secretary White. Okay, General Keane, you used to be in the 101st, Screaming Eagles, okay? Don't you have any affinity, love for your men? Nope. Just keep sending them down the roads in Humvees, wheeled vehicles, and boom. Keeps the American people in a rage, keeps profits up, keeps the war going.
Now, Mike, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our show together. Now, I heard a quote on the recent film USS Indianapolis. What was it? War is good for business, and business is good for America.
The problem is that in Indianapolis, they had a seaplane. They had seaplanes.
Unfortunately, we've got to go, Mike.
The seaplane guy landed, and he saved those guys. If that seaplane lieutenant hadn't broke orders and landed his plane and got those men out of the water, nobody would have survived. 880 men went in the water. Only 321 got out.
And the sharks got the rest.
Their skin peeled.
We're out of the show now.